Hi, this is Steve Chandler, and our program today is called Financially Fearless. You know, it's interesting that most people that I talk to or coach or work with or associate with have a confusion about the word fearless. They think fearless means brave or courageous or bold or something like that. They think it's the same thing, basically. But it's really important to see that it's nothing like that. In fact, it's not even similar to that. That being fearless is absolute relaxed inner peace, relaxation, connection to the universe, happiness, deep happiness, not surface pleasure. And there's no thought of fear. There's no feeling of fear whatsoever. There's no idea of fear. Like, why would I be afraid of that? That's a fearless state. So there are so many things we do throughout the day in a fearless way that we don't even notice the fearlessness. But anything we feel real love about, when we're really loving a person or we're really loving an event or something, playing a song on the piano or jogging or running or playing volleyball or something we're really loving that we do. And a lot of us have aspects of work that we just love. And so we're caught up in the present moment flow of it, and there's no fear at that time until we start thinking of the future or other things. So that's the fearless state we're talking about. Now, when I'm being brave, when I'm using courage, there's profound fear inside of me while I'm doing that. So there's a battle going on inside of me. I'm afraid to do this, but I'm doing it anyway. And so I remember when I first started giving speeches years and years ago, I had a huge fear of public speaking. I had a huge fear up in front of an audience. I mean, it was my lifelong fear. I had it all my life. And I'd get in front of an audience, and I would have, it would feel like an elephant was standing on my chest. And something was constricting my throat, and my knees were weak. I couldn't get my breath. Total fear. And I pushed on, and I was brave anyway. And I walked out, and there were 100 people standing there waiting for me to talk. My voice was shaky. My hands were shaking, and my knees were weak. And I spoke anyway. Now that's courage. That's being brave, that's being bold, and that's forging ahead in the face of fear. That's being afraid and doing it anyway. So that's one thing completely different than being fearless. So now, these days, I talk to groups. I talked to a group the other night. There were 300 people in the audience. I remember walking up on the stage, and I felt nothing but love, I felt nothing but excitement, and I was fearless. I wasn't afraid, because that had left me. That left me years ago. And so, there is a possibility in everything of being fearless. If there were no possibility, I would not have written a book called Fearless. I would not get people's hopes up. I would not get my own hopes up. But in the past few years, I've been able to see there really is something called fearless, and it really is different than being brave. Here's something that helped me understand the nature of fearlessness, the joy, the love, the relaxation that is fearlessness. Let's look at the concept of darkness. Darkness isn't anything. Darkness is merely the absence of light. And when I bring light into the room, there is no more darkness. I didn't have to overcome the darkness. I didn't have to remove the darkness. Darkness is nothing at all. It's the absence of light. Well, fear is the same thing. Fear is the absence of love. So I don't have to overcome the fear, battle the fear, be brave and feel the fear and do it anyway. If enough love comes in, there is no more fear. Fear wasn't anything to begin with, but the absence of love. Now, fear and love are opposites. Love and hate are not opposites. Hate is a form of fear. Fear and love are opposites in many ways. So, just like darkness and light are opposites as concepts. So, what occurs when fear disappears is the same thing as when darkness disappears. I light a candle, I turn on the light, there is no more darkness. So, how did I turn on the light as far as talking in front of groups? Well, I practiced, I did it again and again, I built up the love of it. And with enough love, there's no more fear. And so, anything you do over and over and over in a lovingly repetitive way, I mean real loving practice, fear disappears. There are other ways to disappear fear as well. Enlightenment, for example. Someone becomes enlightened, there's nothing to fear. I understand when I'm little that there is no monster under my bed. I'm no longer afraid. I really get it. Byron Katie uses an example that Ramana Maharshi used, and that is, you walk along in the desert and you think there's a rattlesnake in front of you and you feel huge fear. You get closer, you see it's not a rattlesnake, it's a rope. Now, seeing that it's a rope, you're enlightened that there's nothing to be afraid of. So now there's no fear. That's the enlightenment route to having fear disappear, to bringing the light. So I can have enlightenment or I can have practice. Each one works. Fear disappears. I'm feeling fearless. In other words, there's no feeling there at all other than love, joy, happiness, fun. When we work with people who have a real fear about money, the first thing we want to look at are the underlying beliefs. So someone says to me, oh, I might lose my job. I couldn't handle it if that happened. So I want to look at what would happen if you lost your job. How bad would that be? Is it really true that you couldn't handle it if it happened? Might it not be a blessing if it happened? I mean, you could really handle it. It might be uncomfortable, but you could handle it. Now, this is where people get very confused. They use terms like devastation. I was devastated. They use terms like, I couldn't handle it. That would devastate me. And that's not true at all. Really, the worst thing that they would go through would be discomfort, a little bit of confusion, anxiety, discomfort, worry. That's it. But they don't realize that. They're unwilling to look back over their lives and see, you know what? I've been able to handle everything, even though I might have a self-image that says, I'm cowardly, I'm not good at handling things. If that happened, I'd be devastated. That might be my self-concept. But if I'm honest about my life and look back, I've handled everything. There wasn't anything I couldn't handle, and there won't be in the future. By extension, just by logic, just by enlightenment. So, now, if I'm walking around thinking, if I lost that, if I lost my savings, if I lost my job, if I lost this, if I lost that deal, if I lost this client, I couldn't handle it. If I now know that I could handle that, even if I look at it, there'd be positive aspects to it that I can't see now. Now, the fear starts to go away. Now, because I'm challenging the underlying beliefs behind my fear around money, it starts to go away. And that's where the real work is done. When we look at underlying beliefs around money that I have that aren't true, we walk around and behave as if money were oxygen. We behave as if losing money would be like having the oxygen taken out of a room that I'm in and I can't breathe anymore. But it's not that at all. If I lose all my money, I start over. It's the worst thing that could happen. But we don't see that. We behave as if it would be the end of the world, it would be devastating. And because of that, because of those pictures, because of that worst case scenario, I keep running about the horrible effects of losing this deal, of losing this house, of losing this job, of losing everything. Then the fear becomes so profound that I do crazy things with money. I don't save it. I don't do this. I don't do that. It's not strong. It's not logical. It's not a good part of my life anymore. So the first step is to realize money is not oxygen. Money is something I can create when I need to. And I want to find the real evidence for that and not just try to believe in it. You know, there's so many good things about money. There's so many wonderful things that once I can flip and shift and look at it differently, I can really have fun with it. And I can really learn things about life through money. It's just really an exciting thing. For example, money is the perfect teacher of what I call the law of creation versus the law of attraction. Now, the law of attraction is a very popular thing. There are many people who give seminars in it. The Secret was all about the law of attraction. And it's a fine thing. It's a wonderful thing to know about. And that is, picturing things, having a vision, is a powerful, positive first step in accomplishing things and getting what I want. It's a very good thing. But the problem with the law of attraction is that it doesn't go all the way. It doesn't, all by itself, bring into existence what I want to have. It's just the first step. It just allows me to perceive it and picture it as an outcome I'd like to produce. Now, the law of creation is a law that's really fun to experience the effects of. And that is me being the cause. That is me being the source of what occurs in my life, so that when there's something not occurring that I want to have occur, like, for example, a lot of money in the bank, I can look to me, and I can look inside me what needs to be shifted, what needs to be adjusted, so I can do this in such a way that I get what I want. Now, this is the law of creation. This is me waking up and asking myself, what would I like to create? What would I like to produce? And from that question, I can create my day. I can create the conversations I want to have with the people who can move my goal forward with me. I can create my life. That's a really exciting, fun way to live. Now, the other way to live is the law of attraction or the law of reaction, which is even worse, and that is thinking that other people have all the money, and I need to somehow please them or manipulate them or get them to like me or approve of me before I can have any money. Now, that's the law of reaction and the law of attraction, and it's not the law of creation. Most of our belief systems, and therefore most of our fears, come from childhood. They're carryovers. By the way, there can be no fear if there is no belief. So I really want to look at my underlying beliefs if I'm ever afraid of anything. Now, in childhood, it's funny because in our society, we're kind of encouraged and even trained to please and win the approval of parents or guardians or teachers or camp counselors or people like that. We win their approval. We're good. You were good today. Boy, you were really good today. That means I won your approval. I was pleasing to you. That's all that means. That doesn't mean I made a difference or I served someone or I did something creative or heroic. when a parent tells the child, "You were really good today. You were so good." That means I didn't embarrass the parent. I wasn't a hassle to the parent. I pleased my parent. Now, as a child, one of the things I notice is that the grown-ups have all the money. Grown-ups have everything. So if I want anything, if I want to watch a movie, if I want to rent a movie, if I want to go to Disneyland, if I want to have some candy, if I want to buy something, buy some action figures or dolls, it's up to the grown-ups always, because the grown-ups have all the money. So how do grown-ups relate to me in the most positive way, in a way in which they might buy me stuff and get me what I want? Well, if I please the grown-ups. So as a child, I'm learning that the way I get what I want in the world is to win the approval of grown-ups, or please grown-ups. Now, that's what I've trained myself to do. That's the belief system that gets formed. In order to have what you want, you have to please grown-ups. And the grown-ups have all the money. Kids don't have money. Grown-ups have the money. So that's my belief system. That's what I've been trained day in, day out as a child to do, is to please grown-ups. They have all the money. They have all the power. You need to please them. You need to be good. You don't need to do anything remarkable. You need to be good. And being good means you don't embarrass the grown-ups in the grocery store. You don't embarrass the grown-ups at school where the grown-up has to come talk to the teacher. You're good. You are so good. Now, if I've been trained throughout childhood to be pleasing, to win approval of certain people by being good, in other words, being non-threatening, being accommodating, not making waves, not standing out, being like everyone else, then that becomes the strategy I take into adulthood. How could it not? How could you not carry that over? How could you just drop that? So the answer is you can't. It comes along with you as you enter the global market, as you enter the world. Now, this belief, even though it's kind of unconscious, is still there. The grown-ups have all the money, and if I'm to get any money, I have to please the grown-ups and win the approval of the grown-ups. That's still there. And the people I coach with problems with money, the people I coach with problems earning as much as they want to earn, that's it. That's what's in the way right there. The grown-ups have all the money, and I need to spend my day pleasing and winning the approval of those grown-ups. Otherwise, how will I get money? They have it. Now, you can see the problem there. Because if that's what my day is like, then what I'm going to do is wake up, and I'm going to wait to see who needs what. Who wants my time? Who wants me to do something? And my whole life is from the outside in. I think I might be serving. I might use the word serving, but I'm really not. I'm pleasing and I'm winning the approval of. And I might not even create my day. I might not even write down what I'm going to do, because what if somebody else wants me to do something? I would cross that right off, because I'm operating out of an unconscious belief system that says I need to please the grown-ups, and the grown-ups have all the money. Now, the funny thing about that belief is that it implies that everyone with money, your boss, your client, everyone with money is a grown-up, and I'm not, because if I were a grown-up, I'd have money, but I want money from them, therefore, they're the grown-up right now. Now, because they're the grown-up, it's real hard for me to be fearless around money and to simply state my fee or state my request in a fearless, relaxed way, because here's a grown-up I need to please. When I need to please someone, that's scary, because pleasing people and winning the approval of people is tricky business. Very tricky. I mean, you don't know what pleases a certain person. Their moods change. Everybody's different. They might like this. They might not. And I have to figure all that out every time with each new person, how to please them. It's a scary thing because it doesn't always work. Now, if I would shift and I would be the grown-up and all I'm looking for is how to love and serve in profound ways that make a difference, money would be no problem. But it is a problem because instead of serving, I'm pleasing. And this shows up in so many ways. I see people who hire me to coach them, and I ask what they did the last 3 days, and 90% of what they did was trying to get to know people, trying to win their approval, trying to impress people, trying to make connections with people, trying to please people. Did they make any money? No. That'll come later. They feel that later on down the road, when they can please enough people to get their attention, they will then announce what service they're going to provide, or then start to serve them in such a way that they'll get paid. But the habit of pleasing takes over even then. So the service isn't even very powerful because I'm continuing to anticipate whether this person is pleased with me or not. So I go through all this grotesque, contorted dance to win someone's approval instead of pleasing them. I may have a client and I know what would be good for him, but I'm so afraid that he would be offended if I spoke the truth and was really direct with him that I just pretend that he's fine. And I keep meeting with him and hoping he'll keep paying me, and I'm never telling him the truth. Finally, he lets me go and he says, I don't need you anymore. I'm working with someone else or I'm doing something else, and I'm offended. I'm betrayed. I'm really upset. How come I lost this client? Well, the answer is, I wasn't serving the client. I was pleasing the client. Now, this has application throughout my day, throughout life. So one of the ways people become fearless around finances is to shift from pleasing people, from thinking everyone else is the grown-up, from thinking the grown-ups have all the money, from thinking I need to win their approval to get money, and shift. I'm the grown-up, and I serve other grown-ups. That's it. That shift alone creates a kind of fearlessness after practicing it. I practice that, I practice that, I practice that. Now I'm fearless because I'm in touch. I have a strong connection with what creates money in this world, and that's service. I have a lot of people say to me, my biggest problem with money is worthiness. I don't feel worthy. I don't have that sense of being worthy. Deep down in me, I have worthiness issues. Well, here's the thing about worthiness that can really enlighten people if they allow themselves to relax into this possibility. And that is, there is no worthiness. There is no way you would ever know or find out whether you were worthy. In fact, worthiness doesn't exist. It's a dreamed-up idea. It's a kind of superstition we have. There's no way to ever find out whether you are worthy or not, because there's no worthiness. There's no such thing. There isn't a center like the motor vehicle department where you can go and check on your worthiness. How worthy am I? Well, let me call it up on the screen. Just a minute, please. What's your social security number? It says here on a scale of 1 to 10, you are a 3. You're not very worthy. How do you charge people anything for what you do? That wouldn't happen. There's nowhere to go. There's no person who can tell you when you're worthy. It doesn't exist. Why not let it go? So there's a great quote in Michael Neal's book, Supercoach. And he quotes Chester Karras, and here's the quote. You don't get what you deserve in life. You get what you negotiate. Wow, that's powerful. I love this book, Super Coach. It's not a book for coaches. It's a book for people. It's a book for people who want to be coached by a book. Because the subtitle is 10 Secrets to Transform Anyone's Life. And it's really true that those secrets in the book do transform anyone's life if they slow down enough to really read it, and if they slow down enough to really get it and practice it. So again, I'll read the quote in Michael's book. You don't get what you deserve in life. You get what you negotiate. Now that's powerful, because if I'm walking around wondering if I deserve money, wondering if I deserve to be rich, wondering if I deserve to be financially secure, and let's say I have all kinds of doubts, I don't feel worthy, I don't feel very deserving, then I'm not likely to save money. I'm more likely to spend it on other people that I think are more deserving. I'm not likely to build up financial strength in my world. I'm more likely to run from paycheck to paycheck, panicking, trying to please other people. And when you find people who are out there without much in savings, without much strength, you can see that they were pleasing and running around trying to win the approval of their children, husbands trying to win the approval of the wife, spending money they didn't have, running up credit cards, instead of actually serving. So this thing about negotiating, that's so powerful, because negotiating really is a creative act, whereas deserving is not. Deserving is sitting back, letting people judge me, and sitting in fear. Wow, do people think I deserve this? That's a child, that's a little kid, thinking the grown-ups have all the money. We want to shift that. And it's amazing when that gets shifted. Now negotiation is creative. It's between two people. It's like a co-written song. It's like Lennon and McCartney. It's beautiful, and money comes out of it. Now, I want to say one final thing. I'm not doing this recording because I'm a lifelong fearless person trying to help you be like me. I'm actually someone who has struggled with this more than most people. And I really mean that. I'm not just saying it to connect with you out of humility. Oh, he's so humble. The guy's so real. That's not it. It's really true that when you come to my seminar on money, if those of you who come to that one, you will hear my stories and see my case histories and have me expose to you how bad this can get, this whole money fear thing, how bad it can get, and how bad life can get, and how fearful I can make everything by operating out of this belief system that says the grown-ups have all the money, I'm not a grown-up, I'm still a child, I don't deserve it, I need to know my worthiness before I charge anything, I need to please my family before I save money. All those things, all those beliefs that are so damaging, that make life so painful and make it a living hell. Well, that's me. That's my story. That's where I come from. And it's only through the people I've worked with in recent years that I've been able to see the light and bring light to the darkness and have it go away. So the thing I know is if it can work with me, it can work with anybody. And I mean that really. If it can work with me, it can work with anybody. And that's true. So the people who have helped me the most, the Steve Hardisons, the Byron Katies, the Michael Neals, those people are people who themselves have learned. When you hear the stories of those three people, it's not like they came out of the womb with all kinds of Girl Scout and Boy Scout medals dangling from their little uniforms, and they were just wonderful, perfect people from the start. They had a very dark night of the soul before it turned around. And there's a lot of humor in all of that. That's not such a tragic thing. That can really be a fun story. But the great thing is, it can help other people in powerful ways. It can show other people that they can really, really, really be financially fearless. And they don't have to struggle and fight and worry and live life in such pain. When's it going to end? In the nursing home? In the final hospital moments when there's a drip IV that tries to use pharmaceuticals to numb or suffocate that fear that's still pounding in me? Have I left enough money behind? I mean, let's just get rid of that right now.